Hello, this is Liz Gumbiner welcoming you to a new season of Spawned. Actually, it's a whole new Spawned. We've been away for a while because we've been busy making some changes to Cool Mom Picks and to our podcast that we're really excited about. But first, the biggest change is that Kristen has left to focus on her career as an author. It's the end of an era for sure for us. It's been a long, great run. And of course, we wish her all the best. As for me, I'm in a new place too. I'm now raising a blended family of two kids and two stepkids full time. And I'm not gonna lie, we've been through a lot over the past year, just like I know a lot of you have. Things are tough on a lot of parents right now. That's why when I think about Spawned and what I want it to be, I really want it to be a helpful place where we can all get through the ups and downs of parenting together. I've been helping parents with all kinds of issues for years, but things really feel different now. I feel like we're tired, we're lacking support, we're struggling with all kinds of stuff, whether we have young children or teens about to fly the nest. And on top of that, we're dealing with a really polarized world, a lot of tension to say the least, and we don't need more of that. I'm really hoping Spawned can be a helpful respite for you, a place we can honor our differences, but still see that we have more in common than not, a few minutes that we can laugh when we need it, and above all, a reminder that we really can get through tough times together because that's what parents do really, really well. We support each other. I'm going to have a new guest each episode, and wow, do I have some great guests lined up for you, authors, business leaders, celebs, and maybe a few names that will be extremely familiar to you. That's all I'll say about that for now. So join me and my guests for some real talk that will hopefully make your parenting journey smoother, or at least as smooth as possible. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking about kindness with Jacqueline Lindsay, the co-founder and CEO of kindness.org. We're going to talk about the science of kindness, how we can raise our kids to bring more kindness into the world, and what we get wrong about random acts of kindness. I'm excited to dig in with Jacqueline right after this. Today's episode of Spawned is brought to you by Sourcebooks, publishers of the wonderful new picture book, I Am Money, by award-winning children's author Julia Cook and best-selling author and financial coach Garrett Gunderson, with charming illustrations by Josh Cleland. When you think about it, financial literacy is one of the most important things we need to teach our kids. It impacts every one of us our entire lives, and yet it really gets the attention of other educational topics, like, say, coding or learning foreign languages. I Am Money is a wonderful schoolhouse rock-style lesson for kids in all things finance, because yes, even the youngest kids are capable of learning about spending, saving, and sharing, and even an intro to Bitcoin. You can find I Am Money by Julia Cook and Garrett Gunderson on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local independent bookstore, or wherever you get your books. You can also visit coolmompicks.com, where we've put together a helpful guide to teaching kids about money by age to help you get your kids started on having a healthy relationship with money for life. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Jacqueline Lindsay is the co-founder and CEO of kindness.org, and she believes that kindness is humanity's greatest asset. Isn't that awesome? It was this ethos that inspired her to launch kindness.org, a global nonprofit that uses rigorous science to create solutions for kinder classrooms, communities, and companies. Jacqueline has spent almost 20 years in the nonprofit space, where she's helped raise more than $100 million for domestic and international missions. An author and keynote speaker, she sits on the board of Children in Conflict and is the host of the podcast, Why Kindness? Jacqueline is also a mom of two boys, ages 3 and 6, living in St. Petersburg. And I'm so happy to have her here today. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you, Liz. I'm so honored to be here.
I'm so thrilled. We were both saying that it's amazing we've never connected. I've known kindness.org for so long, and you are the perfect person to kick off this new season of Spawned.
Awesome. I'm really honored. I'm a huge fan of you and Cool Mom Picks, and it's really a joy to be with you today.
Thank you so much. So listen, it's really cool to get to tell people you're in the kindness business. How did that come about?
So, short answer, I had always been in the nonprofit space, largely in fundraising development, but also had an entrepreneurial spirit and knew I wanted to step out and do something on my own. And when I thought about the most important thing in the world to me, when I thought about, you know, the biggest problems and everything I was seeing and where I felt I could most meaningfully contribute, I kept landing on this very ambiguous, nebulous idea of kindness. And it felt so antithetical to what I was used to, which was working on missions that had a very clear, tangible impact. And this felt very ethereal, but I trusted my instincts and, yeah, left a job I loved to pursue this big idea of kindness and a kinder world. It took some time to figure out exactly what it would turn into. But that was a little bit of the origin and what led me to build something of my own.
I like that you acknowledge that it's a bit ethereal, because I think it is. And I think that's partly why we get a lot wrong about it, me especially. So maybe we start with a definition. What do you think is the difference between being kind and being nice? Or is there a difference?
Absolutely a difference. My favorite example to give is that being nice is not telling someone when they have food in their teeth, and being kind is telling someone. Very simplistic, but the idea of it is really that it takes courage to be kind. It can be uncomfortable to be kind. It's going above and beyond to be kind. Nice is a nicety. It's being more polite, and you aren't willing to put yourself in situations that can maybe be a little uncomfortable or push you out of your comfort zone. And it's important to acknowledge everyone, every single person listening would have their own idea of what kindness is, how they would define it. Liz, if you're comfortable, I would love to maybe ask you if you would define it in your own mind. Like, there's no wrong answer, but how would you define kindness?
Oh my goodness, you're throwing this back at me. I'm not prepared. I think it's, gosh, now I just want to repeat back what you just said. The courage to tell your friend that they have spinach in their teeth. Mm. Maybe it sounds cliche, but I think it's about treating people the way you want to be treated.
It's not cliche. That's exactly it. And it's fairness and acts of justice and gratitude and forgiveness. Like, there's so much in this big idea of kindness. So we really see it as a meta value that encompasses all the ways that we want to show up as people. And we hope people will show up for us.
I think you say that beautifully. You know, I was thinking about random acts of kindness, because that's a phrase we use a lot. I know we've written about it on Cool Mom Picks. And I was thinking about asking you about it. And then I happened to find on your site a link to this fascinating article on the cost-benefit analysis of different acts of kindness. I think you put it together during the pandemic. And I just want to read a few of these because this blew me away. You kind of plotted it out on an XY chart about highest cost, lowest cost. But let's talk about the benefits. One of the findings you had were the most beneficial things that you could do to be kind were things like wash your hands, take care of a sick family member, cover your mouth when you cough. Those were the top three. Mm-hmm. Make a donation to people hit hard by the economic shutdown, cook a nutritious meal to share with your family, buy groceries with someone, arrange video visits with elderly relatives. Kind of like very simple things, right? Mm-hmm. Tell a child that you're proud of them. And then I went to the least beneficial acts of kindness, and this is what kind of blew me away. Least beneficial: respond kindly to a negative comment online, leave art for someone to find, put a positive sign in your yard for someone, invent holidays and give random gifts to someone, join a local neighborhood group, volunteer to be infected as part of a vaccine trial, very 2020, spend 30 minutes learning about a social issue, learn how to say please and thank you in 5 different languages. Those are the kinds of things that I see on a lot of like what we call listicles online, like that these are acts of kindness that are going to be meaningful. And I think we do them because they make us feel good. Mm-hmm. What are we getting wrong?
So one thing to help us level set with this is when I tried to go from taking something very ethereal and making it feel tangible, I realized that one of the biggest gaps in the space of kindness was this combination of science into our solutions for a kinder world. So those listicles, those are ideas, those are recommendations, those are people with often good intentions trying to spread kindness. But I saw a gap in where's the evidence? Where's the data? How do we drive people to choose kindness in a way where we can give them more meaning to why it matters? Arguably, people would say, but we know kindness is good. Why does it matter? And for me, it really was about grounding it in evidence so that when we're guiding people with those listicles, they can know it's making a difference and here's the impact it's having. And so for the past several years, we've worked really hard to answer big questions like, how do you define kindness? How do you measure kindness? And what is the effect of us choosing kindness? The output of that is a framework where we look at the cost and benefit of kindness. One, we don't say random because kindness takes something from us. It takes our time, our energy, our intention, our willingness to see somebody and choose to help them. It's an active thing that we're doing every time we choose kindness. So we actually work to reframe how people talk about it in that it's not really random. And within the framework, the cost and benefit, the idea is acknowledging it takes something of us and being okay with that, but also trying to understand what benefit is it giving to that person. done. So we define kindness as the ABCs. It's an action intended to benefit someone, typically at a cost. And then we took all the acts of kindness we could find. We can do this for anything. In this particular study you're referencing, we did it in response to COVID. So we looked at acts of kindness specific to the crisis that was facing our world at that time. And we gathered acts of kindness from reputable sources, exactly what you're saying, the lists that we found online. We organized all of that into a really robust database. And then we surveyed thousands of people to ask them what matters most. In this time, what is the kindest way we can be showing up for each other? And then we organized it and did the analysis and then produced a recommended list of how you could show up. And arguably, what we would say is, it's not that any act doesn't matter, right? They all are meaningful in different ways. They all still can make a difference. Every act can make a difference. But this gives people a guide. So when they're choosing kindness, they can look and say, if I want to do the most beneficial thing, what would that be? If I want to do the most costly thing, the thing that takes more of my time, more of my energy, what would that be? And then we bring that to life and give those recommendations to people.
And I love that this isn't theoretical, that this comes from your research hub, Kind Lab, which I find really fascinating that you research the causes and consequences of kindness, and then you build tools and programs to effectively increase kindness around the world. So what are some other findings that you think might be particularly helpful to parents?
So kindness is genetic, and people are always thrown by that.
Well, I'm thrown. I just lit, my jaw just dropped. You can't see me, but it did.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm a mom, and I wasn't actually going to have children. And my husband and I kind of a little later in life decided to, a little later in our marriage. And I remember entering into that journey, and I felt like everything I was seeing was about this idea of how do you raise kind kids? When I realized, wait, it's actually within each of us. You know, I had learned the science of globally, it's genetic. So first and foremost, every human has it in our genes. But like all sorts of genes, we can have more or less of how it's showing up. And the most interesting thing, not only about it being genetic, is that also it can be cultivated like a habit. So it's something you can grow. Like we can't change the color of our eyes, you know, or our hair, the way you think of genetics. So this is something that's like a muscle as well. And it can be nurtured and developed. I love talking about that chasm of kindness. Also, children begin showing empathy, you know, before they often are talking. So when your child is wanting to be a helper, or they see someone fall and they want to go help them up, and they might not even be able to communicate this, that's them showing the kindness within themselves. And I just think that's a really powerful thing to remember, that they have it. And what we're doing is showing them why it matters and how to continue to cultivate it, to choose it, to let it become a core part of how they show up when they go into school, when they go into classrooms, as they get older, because our lived experience begins to introduce new ways of treating people. You know, when we start to be exposed to things, new perspectives and opinions and beliefs as we get older, to me, I go back to us choosing kindness. So it's in us, but you still have to act on the feeling of it.
Well, there's a lot of use of that expression that hate is learned. When we see videos that everybody wants to share from Upworthy or whatnot, of like little children hugging each other, holding hands, and that children are born kind. And if they are acting in a mean or spiteful or hateful way, that that's learned. I'm wondering if you're challenging that a little bit by saying that it's genetic.
No, I wouldn't say that. I agree. Hate is learned. And I think that's a little bit of the tension of it, meaning a child, they are born with kindness, but if they are exposed to things that teach them to look at someone who's different than them in a mean way, that's something that's taught, they can start to embrace that as the thing that they are believing or they're acting upon. And that's why when I think about how we're showing up to help with kinder kids, we decided to meet kids where they spend the most time, which is the classroom. We do a lot to try to support families that want to bring kindness into their household as well. But I felt the best thing we could do was really show up where kids are consistently spending the most of their time, which is in schools.
So when parents talk about raising our kids to be kind, or seeing them exhibit behavior that's kind or unkind, I think the default is talking about bullying, whether they're bullying other kids or being bullied or how they behave around bullies. That seems to be kind of our entrance to talking about kindness with kids. And I want to know if you think that that's the right way to do it or if there's something else that needs to happen.
So I think that talking about it is wonderful. I wouldn't want anyone to feel like it's a wrong way. However, I think there's better ways to communicate the role of kindness in the life of a child. By focusing on bullying, you're feeding into the negative. And that's not how we should be equipping kids. When we prioritize the pro-social side of kindness, the benefits of it, the implications of what happens when we're choosing it, it allows a child to not feel like it has to be connected to combating something negative. It just becomes a part of how they're showing up, living and operating. And they will realize and learn very quickly. You know, you said at the beginning, kindness is our greatest asset. That's my deepest core belief. But I also know and have learned unkindness is our greatest adversary. We can choose to lean into one side or the other, just like how we choose to digest news or the idea that when 10 things happen in your day, 9 could be wonderful, but usually you'll talk about that 10th thing that wasn't so wonderful. That will be the thing you bring into dinner. It's all about our perspective and how we're showing up. And so we really try to encourage people to focus on the pro-social side of choosing kindness. As children get older, and especially for parents who are experiencing bullying or their child might be experiencing bullying, of course, it's important to feel equipped to know how to navigate those discussions. But we really try to encourage parents to remember if your child is equipped with knowing agency of choice, they're responsible for their own actions, they're choosing how they're showing up and responding to these things. That to me is the most important thing.
I find that incredibly helpful. And I want to build on that just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because let's say we feel like we're doing everything right. We feel like we're teaching our kids to be kind, but then we see them acting out in unkind ways. What do you think from your research have you learned that maybe parents are doing wrong and not realizing? Is there a way that we could better talk about kindness or better teach our kids to be kind? The same way, you know, I've learned from your research that painting rainbow rocks and putting them around the neighborhood might be nice, but it's not really an act of kindness. What else can we be teaching our kids that will be positive and helpful?
I think knowing it's a habit, I would encourage parents to incorporate kindness into discussions more consistently. So even though my children are young, they know almost every day at dinner, I'm going to say to them, did anyone choose kindness or show you kindness today? Did you choose kindness or show anyone kindness today? It's about this idea of them recognizing it, calling it out, remembering it, affirming it, acknowledging it, being grateful for it. It's showing the action of it. Again, I think when we are equipping our kids to realize the power of choice, they have agency of their choice. It's up to them to choose how they're going to respond to certain things. And being gentle with those reminders, I think it's giving them something really powerful and potent in their tool belt. They get to decide how they're going to show up and respond when they see someone being bullied, or when they themselves might be experiencing bullying, or when they themselves might be the one being a little mean. Yeah, I have 2 little boys and we have a jar called the Choose Kindness Jar. And I have it out because I just want that constant reminder. It is a choice and you're choosing how you're responding right now. And when they do something and they don't even recognize it, that's often when I'll say, did you realize you just did something really thoughtful? You know, you showed up and helped your brother in this way. They automatically did it, but you should celebrate that because it's them really truly learning this habit of choosing to show up and be kind for that other person.
How does the Choose Kindness Jar work? I'm fascinated.
So they can say it for each other, but anytime my husband or I see one of them choose kindness, whether toward each other, toward one of us, or they have an idea to be kind to someone like a neighbor, we have different colored post-its for each of them. And we just put it on the post-it and drop it in the jar. It's this reminder of like, it's not just, oh, there's an idea of kind acts. It's them choosing kindness and us acknowledging that. And then we'll pull them out every so often and be like, wow, do you remember that one time there was only one apple left? And you said, mama, can you cut that in half and give the other half to brother? You know, these real powerful things where they were selfless or seeing the other person's need or being willing to do something when they didn't have to. It's all that positive reinforcement at very young ages that are shaping their understanding of like why it matters so much. So that's how we choose to do it in our home. I know there's lots of ways people do it, but that's how we like to think about it.
That's such an incredible revelation for me because I know people have like cuss jars where you have to put in money to, you know, keep yourself from cursing, or, you know, people use jars to add a reward for potty training, but you don't think of rewarding kindness so that you become more conscious of it and it becomes a habit. And I think that's lovely.
Thank you. But just to clarify, we try to keep it away from the idea of being rewarded. Like they don't get anything for it outside of just us saying, wow, like that's amazing you did that. So I guess the reward is just affirming them in that way. So it's not like at the end they get a prize.
But the reward is you've done something that's made people feel good.
Exactly.
And you make yourself feel good and you're getting your parents' praise. And those things are very rewarding to young kids.
Yes.
So maybe you don't know this yet, but maybe your research bears this out. How do you translate that to older kids or teens?
So I should say that I personally had some things happen around bullying that really affected me and my mental health when I was in my teen years. And a lot of my why, if you will, to start kindness.org came from that. It was me realizing my own life was so affected by kindness or lack of kindness that I wanted to create a world where it was at the forefront of how we treated one another and showed up for one another. So the more I learned about it, the more powerful I realized this thing was. You know, it connects us across difference and it has the power. Truly, we've looked at it in all lenses. We've looked at it politically and through cultures. And it's just such an unbelievable thing to realize the power of kindness. But there is this interesting thing that happens when we're teens and we're seeing kids in middle school, especially, and it's hard to know how to show up, choosing kindness and to teach kindness. So when we created our curriculum, we decided to serve up through eighth grade with it. It starts at kindergarten. And our thought was that we could get children in these very formative developmental years that they're in, that would really be the foundation for them to lead a life of kindness, to truly understand the nuances of it and be hardwired for it as they continued to get older and face more challenges and adversity. And, you know, some of it is life, right? We live in a complex world and life is life and we're going to all be faced with difficult things. But we focus on the science of kindness. And so the students are scientists starting at the youngest of ages, and they are not prescribed kindness. And I really think that this is one of the disrupting parts of it and something I would encourage parents to think about. Even your language of when you're saying, well, just be kind, that is very difficult for a child to grip. It's hard to understand what that really means for them. And so we focus on the science of kindness and we give kids a framework to learn about the benefits of kindness. One thing we've seen, especially with our teenage boys, that we're serving. Sometimes it's really hard to be kind and it takes bravery and courage. When they learn that it's brave, they have this fact about it and this data point about it where all of a sudden it's almost cool to be kind, right? Because it's required to show up and be courageous and brave. Giving them that vernacular and that new way of engaging with kindness where it's not fluffy, it's not weak, it's not feminine, it's not soft. It's really shown to improve how children and kids and teenagers engage with it. That's where I would recommend starting.
I literally am typing a million things while you're talking because everything you're saying is so important and helpful and eye-opening for me, at least. My last question, I guess it's a little ironic that it's the last question. I want to talk about being kind to yourself because I think that's something parents put last. Mm-hmm. What does your research bear out in terms of ways that we can be kind to ourselves as parents?
Love, love, love this. So I go always to kind of the age-old idea that you can't pour from an empty cup. So if you are not filling you up, you're the cup in the scenario. So if you're not filling yourself up, you can't pour out to love your family or to serve your community or to show up well for your partner or whoever, your friend group, your family group, etc., or the oxygen mask. is another great example and metaphor for this idea. Self-kindness is essential. I will say, just to separate from our research, we've done very little in the realm of self-kindness. It's next on our docs. So this is more speaking from like general research that we have found, but not conducted ourselves. And then personal research that I've done to try to better understand what this means for how I'm leading kindness and how I'm thinking about it and for the work that we're doing. So one, you need to figure out each day for yourself how you're nourishing yourself. And my little tip and trick for all those parents that are calendar parents out there, I color code my nourishment each day lavender, the color lavender on my Gmail calendar. And I look each day. And if I don't see lavender, I have to add something. And it might just truly be a 10-minute meeting invite that I color code lavender, where I go and do a 10-minute meditation, or I'm taking, 15 minutes to go walk around my office building and get some fresh air. But anything where you're making sure each day you do something for yourself is something I just really urge people to do, because you think you don't have time, but if you're ending every day exhausted, stressed, and you haven't done anything to care well for yourself, we all know, that's when we get stressed. It's when we bite back. It's when we overreact. It's when we get sick, And so it's just building that intentional time for yourself, and the benefits will truly bear out immediately. You'll just realize how much more clear-headed you are, how much calmer you are. And I found that, I'm an entrepreneur. My husband's the stay-at-home dad for our family, and that's the best family construct we've created. And many a times, I'm coming home and I'm biting back at him, or, we're getting in a little tiff or whatever. And he's like, aren't you supposed to be running kindness? Because I'm like,
hold that over you.
I feel it. It's like, truly, I have seen in this little experiment that those are the days where I didn't take time to just go care well for myself, just those little bits. So you can't pour from an empty cup. So make sure you're filling your cup up each day in whatever way you need.
I think that's beautiful. You are so inspiring and encouraging. And I feel like the way the world is right now, we need more kindness and we need more you. Jacqueline, thank you so much. And listen, what's the best place to find you if our listeners want to learn more about you or what you're doing?
Yes. Well, come to our site, kindness.org. We have an amazing kids and family resource page full of activities and educational materials and resources for all ages of kids that our families love to engage in. Follow us on social, email us. We write back to every email, hello@kindness.org. Would love to connect with you. And if you want to bring kindness to your kids' school, Learn Kind serves K-8. And we're so proud of what this curriculum's doing, and it's free and it's having incredible impact on kids. So yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So honored to be here. And hopefully this was helpful.
I think it was incredibly helpful. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of Spawned. Of course, huge thanks to our guest, Jacqueline Lindsay of kindness.org. And thanks as always to our awesome, awesome engineer, John Bowen. If you have questions, comments, topic ideas, or you just want to reach out and say hi, I'm very chatty also. I always respond. You can find me on Instagram at coolmompix or at mom101. You can find me on Facebook in the Spawned podcast community, which is back. And hey, I'm always on coolmompix.com, where you can find our show notes and links and info about everything you heard here today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm grateful for your time. I know how limited it is, so I really hope we've made it worth your while today. Take care of yourself and have a great day.